and welcome to another episode of GT Radio. We have a great guest on the show tonight, a guy with a lot of insight and distinguished background. He's worked in Vegas, seen the evolution in Vegas. He's worked in Atlantic City. He's worked in Asia. I mean, he's worked for Wynn. I mean, he has a lot of experience, but the key to his experience and his rise has been, as you'll hear, a lot of hard work. Let me welcome to the show Stanford Lee.
Hey, thank you, Tino, and thank you for having me on your show today.
Yeah, no problem. So Stanford, you have an amazing story, but you grew up in Vegas, right? And you saw you were part of that whole evolution in during that time that you grew up, right? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so Vegas kid. My father was in the Air Force. I was born in the Bay Area originally, but moved out to Las Vegas when I was 3 years old. So I've seen some major changes there. For the people who live in Las Vegas now, Rainbow used to be the edge of town when I was in high school. There was nothing behind it. And now, I mean, that's the middle of the city. But, you know, growing up, you know, it started out with downtown being part of it. Golden Nugget was one of the things there. And with the opening of the Mirage when I was in high school, I got to see a lot of the business transition towards the Strip and move towards the southern end of Vegas. Saw a lot of buildings get imploded. I think one of the neatest things that I ever saw was when Treasure Island opened. And, you know, it was New Year's, and they shot a cannon, and next thing you know, one of the dunes was falling. And I think that was New Year's Eve.
Wow.
And just amazing.
Crazy.
But every time I go back and visit Las Vegas, it seems like there's something different. So it's been neat watching it grow at the same time that I was growing up.
Now, you tell us a little bit about your education and then how you got into the casino business.
Yeah, well, I was very fortunate to be growing up in Las Vegas. I grew up in a family with fairly limited means, and my sister is actually a concert pianist, so we definitely wanted the resources going to her education. So as I was entering college, I made a promise to myself and to my parents, but mainly to myself, that no one would spend a dime on me for school. And growing up in Las Vegas really gave me the opportunity to work my way through school. So I actually started in the casinos at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino a long time ago. I think Peter Morton was a genius back then and a real pioneer. So I started out there in the health spa, moved up to the front desk, and it was interesting. When I was working at the health spa, I used to open the door for a lady every day. I didn't even know who she was. And it turns out she was the hotel ops director. And when it came time to move around in the casino, when I interviewed to go to the front desk, lo and behold, job was mine. You never know. You never know who you're going to run into. But
especially in the casino business.
Health spa, front desk, bell desk, valet, doorman. So I've done pretty much every hotel ops job at the Hard Rock, and used that to put myself through school. So I would work graveyard and then go finish my classes in the morning, made sure I had some good blackout curtains so I get some sleep, repeat the process, and there it went. After a few years...
Tell us a little bit about Morton. Tell us a little bit about what made him a genius and what you learned from him at that particular time about the business, because that was your first kind of exposure, and what a thing to be exposed to.
Oh, it was really neat. I mean, you know, you had a guy who wasn't afraid to push the envelope. When you think about how to market and how to brand, I mean, you really want to stand out and differentiate yourself. So a lot of the campaigns that they did around the Hard Rock really pushed the envelope. Really, I mean, some of them were pretty risque, but, you know, it made a name for that casino, that hotel, And it was a cool place to be, and it was a cool place to work.
What do you think gave him that edge? Where do you think he got that from? How was he so in tune with what worked?
Well, I think he was fearless, right? And, I think he really took what worked for him at the Hard Rock Cafe. I mean, he had those all over the world. But then he really took that and pushed it to the next level. I've been pretty fortunate to work for a lot of other individuals as well as Peter Morton, who pushed the envelope. You've got Sheldon Adelson, who built the Kotai Strip in Macau. You've got Steve Nguyen, who, I personally, just growing up in Las Vegas, watched him change the landscape. Starting from Golden Nugget all the way to the Mirage, what he did with Wynn and Encore. I think these guys, they're driven. They get knocked down a little bit. They always pick themselves back up, and they try to do better. And I think that's a common trait shared by all of them.
Yeah. They don't. Whatever happens, they just keep barreling forward, right?
Yep.
They never give
up.
That's
the key to success.
Yeah, it's a lot of hard work. So you didn't really you were doing this, but you had also done pre-med, right?
Well, when I was in college, like I was saying, I was working graveyard and then going to school. It's funny. You were right. I actually was thinking about being a doctor someday. And the funny part is, while I was in my college education, usually organic chemistry is the gatekeeper to whether you become a doctor or not. If you do well in it, you go on to be a doctor. If you don't do well in it, you just, pick another profession. I happen to ace organic chemistry, but what changed my mind about pre-med was I actually did a rotation in a hospital, and I think it's a good idea to walk in the shoes of a profession that you might go into. Well, I was doing a rotation at Desert Springs Hospital in the ER, and I had this sudden realization that I was a germaphobe, and it was a pretty intense realization that, wow, I really don't want to be in a hospital. Having played high school sports and having been an athlete, I mean, you never wanted to end up in a hospital anyway. But when I was doing the rotation, I realized, oh, man, I don't think I could do this every day. And so I had to do a quick career switch to where, I ended up taking the LSAT and the GMAT, and I figured whichever test I do better in, the LSAT, for those people who don't know, is the law school entrance exam. And the GMAT is for MBAs, business programs. So I figured whichever one I would do better in, I'd just go that direction. I ended up doing really well in both tests, and that actually gave me the opportunity to go to graduate school at Cornell. My law school exam actually got me a scholarship to actually attend the Boyd Law School in Las Vegas. So I started out there in that law school and then was able to finish up both degrees while attending Cornell. So, again, I guess trying to overachieve or punch above my weight, but glad to say that I finished both. And then right out of graduate school is when Harris came and recruited me. And I became a president's associate with their it's basically their intern program, and had a very fortunate opportunity to actually run into some really good mentors there. I was recruited by a woman named Marilyn Nguyen, who I respect greatly. She was the regional president for Bally's Paris and Rio. She put me with two of her very trusted colleagues, Michael Weaver, who is now the CMO for Wynn, and another gentleman named Wilson Ning, who's an SVP for Sands right now in Singapore. But I was very fortunate to have opportunities. Some, you know, you create yourself, but, you know, you really latch on to those mentors and really listen to what they say and watch what they do well. And then, you know, you bring that into your own skill sets. And I'm very fortunate to have people like that along the way.
There seems to be a common theme in your story, and that is that you were able to create options for yourself. So you took the LSAT and the GMAT. You took the first year of, you know, you did the pre-med, but then you switched. You seem to have the ability to be able to switch like that, but the ethics stays the same in terms of the work ethic. Where does that come from? Because I think that people are interested in gaining those qualities. Well, how do you do that?
Well, I think it's really just a mindset, right? I think you have to be relentless in your pursuit. You set a goal for yourself. You set an image of what you want to become, and you start working towards that. I think most people are capable of doing these things, right? I think if you really want something, you got to go after it. And I think you have to be fearless. I really think that you have to not be afraid to fail. And, you know, sometimes you take some risks. You know, even in my career pursuit, you know, I went from Las Vegas to Atlantic City, Atlantic City back to Las Vegas. And then I took my family over to Macau. And, you know, when you think about Macau, you know, it's a foreign land. Even though I'm Chinese, but up to that point, I'd never visited. And fortunately, I have a really good support system. My wife was very adventurous. And, you know, she said, let's take this chance. Let's take this chance. What's the worst that could happen? We go there, we don't like it, we come back. And we ended up loving it. I've been out there for 4 of the last 5 years, and what an amazing experience! Not just for my wife and me, but for my kids. You know, so when you think about how you advance and the work ethic, you know, it's really about just being relentless in your approach, and really not being afraid to fail. So you know, that's how I got to where I'm at.
And a lot of hard work.
Yeah, that too.
that too. Just a little bit. Tell us a little bit about Macau and the whole your whole Asian experience, because we really haven't had an insight on that. What was that like?
Well, it's a wonderful place. I tell you what, if anybody ever gives you a chance to go out there, do it. Just drop everything and do it. You know, I left when I came back. I mean, I left some really strong colleagues out there, and you know, I was able to develop a really strong team out there. But you know, when I think about Macau, the first thing I noticed was that, you know, a lot of the best practices that we developed here in America, I thought there was an opportunity to bring a lot of that over there. You know, even though it's the largest gaming market in the world, there's still a lot of practices, best practices that, you know, they really hadn't established yet. Now, one of the things that I did think was interesting there was that in Macau, they're very advanced from a digital perspective. So when you look at pictures of people walking in the crowds in Hong Kong and the different municipalities, you see a lot of people with their heads buried in their phones. And some of the mediums that they use, there's one called WeChat that is pretty extreme out there. Take Facebook and put it on super steroids. They use it as an e-commerce platform. They pay bills on it. They communicate text-wise. I still use WeChat to communicate with friends that are still in Macau. And
right
now it's about taking those best practices that you established in America and then taking them into a more multimedia-rich environment. And I think with Macau, being able to do that really takes you to the next level. And that's why, you know, you can see so much growth in Macau right now. But what a great experience. to be able to really stretch and take your what you know and then apply it to a different culture, different ground rules. So you know you can't advertise gaming into China. So imagine trying to be a casino marketer and not being able to talk about gaming. It's almost like Fight Club. Like, first rule of Fight Club, you can't talk about Fight Club. Well, first rule of gaming in China, you can't talk about gaming. So that was a little bit of a challenge, but we were able to get around it. You know, that really made us emphasize the non-gaming components, entertainment, dining, shopping, how strong our hotels were. So it really forced me to become a better marketer out there. And now that I'm back in the U.S., it's taking some of the best practices that I established in China and then doing it again over here. So, you know, Macau was a wonderful experience for me.
Yeah, that's amazing. Amazing experience. It really is. So this is your first native casino. How do you find it? You know, what are the differences and how are you digging it?
Well, I tell you what, I love it up here. I've wanted to live in Seattle probably for the last 30 years. I visited when I was 13 and just fell in love with the area. So I jumped at the opportunity to become the chief marketing officer up here. As far as working for a tribal casino, I'd say there's more similarities than differences. When we think about the differences, you know, you're instead of answering to board of directors and shareholders, I mean, you're responsible for a tribe, to answer to a tribe. And what's really neat about that is you really start to see the impact that you have for them. You know, it's really about building a stable stream of income that supports their education, their welfare. And in that sense, it's really enriching because You know when you're working for a commercial company, really it's about stock prices and how do you seek shareholder value, right? Well, here with tribes, I mean, you can see the shareholders. they're right in front of you, and
yeah.
You know, when you think about some of the similarities, you know, I equate it, just going back to Macau. When I was in Macau, one of my goals was to develop a lot of the local, the Macanese, and really get them to the next level. And when I was there, I had a bunch of managers who are now vice presidents. You know, it's about growing people and mentoring them. You know, as my own story had mentors, you know, it's really about paying it forward, right? It's really about developing that next level.
Mm-hmm.
And here I see that similarity. Here it's really about developing the next set of executives who happen to be tribe members. And even those who aren't tribe members, how do you build a culture that truly embodies where you want to take a company's direction? And in that sense, I think it's very similar. You know, where it is different is that, you know, as it's a smaller property, we're more nimble. So any best practices that we're able to put in place, I can do it a lot quicker than in a larger organization. And you know, I see some good things coming for Snoqualmie Casino.
It's great. Great stuff. Give us an overview of the casino business right now, where we're at. What is your view of it?
Are you talking about the overall or just in the Washington area?
Just the overall business.
The overall business, I think it's changed dramatically from even when I started outside of graduate school. When we look at Las Vegas, man, the shift to non-gaming is so tremendous. It's not just about being on a machine or at a table anymore. It's really about a really enriched and multifaceted experience. I mean, entertainment, and even Las Vegas has sports teams now. You know, of course, I've been waiting my whole life to have a professional team in Las Vegas, and the year I leave is when we get the Golden Knights. So I'm a huge hockey fan. And then,
so
of course, the year after, the Raiders are coming to town. So I'm
a
little bummed about that. But
it's a double whammy for you.
Oh, man. So, you know,
it's a double whammy for you. I didn't know you were into hockey.
Well, I am now, man. I tell you what, the Golden Knights are amazing, and they couldn't have come to the city at a better time. I think they truly lifted the city, lifted the spirits of the city, and you gotta put your hearts into them for just for that. So
No,
as a
yeah,
Vegas
they're
kid,
history-making hockey team.
absolutely. And then they go and almost win the whole thing. What the heck?
I know.
So
That was like
that's pretty
crazy.
cool. But
It was crazy
I
stuff.
think they're one of the examples of where the industry is going. It's really about having a well-rounded experience now. There was a time when revenue, 80, 90% of it was gaming, right? Now, in a lot of the casinos, their non-gaming revenue has superseded their gaming revenue, where it's making up 60% of their revenue. So, I think it's healthy, right? I think it's healthy for that change. It's really about truly about entertainment and not just the gaming anymore. And you're seeing that permeate across the world. I mean, Macau is all about building that multifaceted visit as well. The shopping, the entertainment, the hotel, the dining. It just really creates a much more enjoyable environment, and I'm very happy to be part of it.
Yeah, definitely people want an experience now, as opposed to just, sitting in front of a machine. There's no question about that. Through your journey, what are some of the most important lessons you've learned and why?
Well, I alluded to it earlier. I think really it's about being relentless. It's about just making sure that you set goals for yourself, and you don't let anybody tell you that you can't do it. You make sure that you know where you want to be, and you're relentless in your pursuit. I think that's the biggest thing there. Also, just as my very first front desk job was given to me by a woman who I used to open the door for every day, not even knowing who she was. I just opened the door just because, my mom and dad taught me to be a gentleman. I think one of the things that's really important is, do the right things even when nobody is looking. I think, be the way that you're supposed to be, whether someone's looking at you or whether not. I think those are the key things. And then the third thing I'd say, and I mentioned it earlier, pay it forward. I was very fortunate to have some really good mentors, and I think being a mentor yourself is a pretty big deal. Mainly because even in your current environment, you're building the next generation of leaders. That does make your job a lot easier today, because you're building a culture of development, and you're making sure that the people who work with you truly believe that you have a vested interest in them. And I think with those three things, those are the things that got me to where I am today.
Great. What challenges do you think we're facing in the future in the casino business?
Well, I do see it becoming more and more competitive. And I think that the mediums that we communicate with people are going to be, faster paced. I think that to truly become successful as an industry or a company within the industry, you really have to master, let's say, the digital components. Social media, when I first came out as an executive in casinos, Facebook really wasn't even around, right? I think it was MySpace at the time. But look how far that's even Facebook is behind. Now people are on Snapchat, Instagram, WeChat in China. So I think there's a challenge to have mastery of that. But I think the challenge is twofold. I think not only do you have to have mastery of that, but I think you can't lose sight of the original thing that got you this industry, which is the hospitality and service components. So just as you have to master the medium that attracts a lot of the people who use them, you still have to make sure that the service elements are there. the opening the door for somebody, the handshake where it's appropriate, the simple greeting and how courteous you need to be. I think you have to balance the fast-paced nature and the mastery of digital components without losing touch of that service. So that's where I think the casino industry is going and some of the challenges that the companies will be facing.
So what you're saying is that digital has to converge with customer service.
Absolutely. I think you cannot lose sight of the customer service and getting to know your customer on a one-to-one basis. I mean, there's tools that help you do that. But even so, I've got team members here that, I mean, they're the true assets of the company. You know, they're the ones who keep the customers coming back and back and back. You know, the front line, exactly.
Right.
And, you know, the technology we use to talk to those guests, it makes it a little easier to talk to them. And I think we still do have to master it from a cost effectiveness and from an efficiency standpoint. But really, it still does come back to the person who greets people on the floor every day. You know, those are what drive industry. And that's what keeps people coming back.
Yeah. You want them to feel like they come into your house.
Exactly.
What's your advice for people starting out in the business?
My advice for people starting out in the business, you know, I think there's a little bit of flexibility. I don't think you need to know what you're going to be even in college. I mean, I thought I was going to be a doctor, right? But I think, you know, if you're in school, you set yourself up with success by, you know, doing as well as you can. You know, I may sound like I'm preaching because I'm actually a father, but, it's really about everything that you do, try to do it well. Like I said, even if nobody's looking at you, do it well. Do it to the best of your ability. Because a lot of skills that you learn in one thing that you do transfers to another. When I was in grad school, there was a class that I took called organizational behavior. And really what it talks about is the theories behind how you convince people about change and change management, and how you organize teams and all that. Well, the funny thing is I learned a lot of that just by being a bellman at the Hard Rock.
Yeah.
I used to have to work with different personalities every day. I had to, you know, when I was able to supervise, you know, you're supervising guys who have college degrees, you have guys who barely finished high school, you've got young guys, you've got family guys, and really everybody responds to something different, right? So if you're supervising or working with other guys, you got to know how you fit within the team and you know, how to influence, right? And, you know, I learned more about management well before I ever got to school. So, you know, school's not the end-all, be-all. I mean, it helps open some doors for you. But, you know, whatever you're doing, do it well. Do it, even if nobody's looking.
Yeah, that's great advice. So you moved to Seattle, but you're a 49er fan. What's up with that?
Yeah, I've got a little flack for that since I've been up here. You know, I was from the Bay Area. My first football memory was actually the catch. Joe Montana to Dwight Clark.
Yeah.
You know, rest in peace.
Yeah.
But, man, what an amazing childhood to watch watch the 49ers. But, yeah, I'm in the heart of Seahawks country. So, I've had to correct people and say, no, I'm not a 49ers fan. I am a five-time Super Bowl winning champion 49ers fan. So I've had to say that.
Right.
So you gotta lean into it, right?
You gotta be fearless. You gotta be fearless.
Yeah,
absolutely.
They
had a game, but you said they had an injury or something, right?
Yeah, they brought in a running back named Jerick McKinnon, and unfortunately he blew out his ACL last the last play of the last practice before the season started. You know, it's unfortunate. Young guy, and he's about to make his mark in a new offense that's pretty much catered to his strengths. So, you know, but you know, those coaches that with the 49ers, they're smart guys. They'll figure a way out of it. But it makes the season a bit more challenging.
This is great interview. Let's go to some callers, because we got quite a few people lined up here. And hang on one sec. Hello, this is Tino Magnetta with Stanford Lead. You have a question for Stanford?
I do. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, hi.
Hey, Stanford. This is Colleen, a colleague of your past in Las Vegas. How are you?
Colleen Birch,
Stanford Lee.
Wow, awesome. Hey, how are you?
I'm well, and I'm a little bit jealous that you live in my hometown. Like, you got back there. I need to figure out how to get back there.
That's right. I've seen pictures of you in a Seahawks jersey. Oh, boy.
Yeah, there you go. Well, I know you just mentioned the catch. There was another catch. Richard Sherman caught a ball at the end of a game a couple years back. Do you remember that catch? I think we were playing.
He didn't quite catch it. He knocked it to Malcolm Smith.
No. Well, anyways, he's your player now, so have fun with Sherm. my question is centers around kind of so Las Vegas. I don't as good of a job as casinos do to try to replicate the Vegas experience. I'm curious about how you either advocate for your customers to make trips to Vegas, or do you try to just keep their gaming activity partial to your property? Are you realistic and know that Vegas is going to get a trip or two a year? And then separately, do you have alliance programs so that benefits your customers if they are looking to come to Las Vegas?
Yeah, so I guess two answers to that question. The first part is I've actually run into a lot of customers who actually do go to Las Vegas. It's actually interesting. Some of our players here that I've talked to personally on the floor actually frequent some of our former casinos. There's a bunch of Caesars players here. There's a bunch of Wynn customers here. So I think there's that expectation that they will be going to Las Vegas at a certain point. And I do think that, so the second part of the answer, I do think from a regional casino perspective that it makes a lot of sense to partner up or create programs that actually encourage some of that, because gaming really is about entertainment. And if you're able to generate an extra experience for your regional customer, I think it's a strength for your property.
Well, if you need an alliance partner down here, we should talk.
I will be calling you just to razz you for football games. So we will add that to the conversation.
All right, awesome. How about I fly up to Seattle and we'll take in the Seahawks-Niner game together? That would be fun.
That sounds like a plan.
Okay, I'm looking at the calendar.
Sounds
now.
Great.
Have a great night.
Thanks, Colleen.
Thanks,
I'll
Colleen.
Talk to you soon.
We'll talk soon. Thank you. Bye-bye. All right,
I'll tell you
that
what,
was
Colleen
that
was one of the most respected colleagues that I've worked with. Amazing woman.
Yeah, she did a great interview, and she was employee number 8 at the Cosmopolitan.
Yeah.
She is pretty extraordinary. Let me see who else we got here. Hello, this is Tino Magnetta. I have Stanford Lee. Do you have a question for him?
Yes, how you doing tonight?
Hi, good. How are you?
Good, good. Cruising across Wisconsin listening to this. and pretty awesome show here tonight. I think the one thing I didn't realize, I was listening to what will to leave Las Vegas for pro sports to come to town. But the other thing is, Tino, I want to know, just a side question, do you record these?
Yes, we do, and we'll send out the recorded shows on Monday to our email list. We also have it on our website.
Okay.
So I can send that to you. That's not a problem.
Because as I am driving down the interstate, I think listening to the conversation, I think I went up like 50 miles an hour in speed on the road. It's obvious.
We got to watch
the passion. Yeah, the passion and commitment that I'm hearing just blows me away. And mentoring, I'm always in deepest respect for that. And I would love to share this with some young people, with organizations like Big Brothers, Big Sisters, just so they can hear what the passion and energy it takes to go to the next level. And that they
absolutely
can.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
my
question, Indian, is I've never had a job. I've always had a way of life. And that sounds mm-hmm. pretty much like the way you attack life. What do you do to get away with the family, with your wife? What's your secret to your downtime and making it happen?
You know, that's a great question. The first thing is I always put my family first. And it's part of the culture that I try to build, even with my team here. My team members, I like to remind them that, you're doing this for your family. And the reason I went to school, the reason that I paid for my own school, it was really about family. And that's my driving force. And fortunately, I really like what I do. I love what I do. And so it doesn't feel like work most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
But mm-hmm. when I do leave work and go do things, I am fully engaged in my family. And fortunately, my kids, I have three daughters, and what I've done is I secretly taught them to enjoy sports. So I get to play basketball with them, and I get to play golf with them, and just teach your kids to do the stuff that you like to do, and it makes your life so much easier. I take what I learned myself growing up, and I try to instill that in the kids. And, you know, it's really fun watching them grow up now. So, for me, it's just about staying in shape so I stay healthy, just so I'm around a little bit longer. But mm-hmm. really, it's about sharing what you enjoy with them and then mm-hmm. watch their passions grow. And, with three kids, they're not all going to like the same thing. But fortunately, they've taken an interest in at least something I like to do. And that's helped a lot. So that's my decompression, if you will.
Well, very admirable. And I always think it's hard because you get in the fast pace of 24-hour-a-day positions, and it can get in confusing. So I commend you on that. And thanks for being with us tonight, taking calls.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for the sentiment. I really appreciated your comments.
Okay. Take care.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Bye-bye. Great question. All right, let's see who we got here. Hello, this is Tino Magnetta. I have Stanford Lee. Do you have a question for him? Hello.
Hey, everybody. This is Eric Greger with Spiriture. I actually wanted to add a question regarding, what the challenges, specifically the gaming industry, is going to be facing, over the next 2 years.
Over the next 2 years?
Yeah, over the next 2 years,
Are you talking specifically with the industry in general or just in the state that I'm in?
I think, I mean, if you could give a more macro approach and then, you know, maybe an applicable use case to your specific state, you know, whether it's some of the, you know, the release with, you know, sports betting and whatnot. But, you know, I'd love to get, you know, your opinion on the gaming industry as a whole. And then if you have a specific use case for your state, you know, that'd be great as well.
Sure. Yeah, so I mentioned it a little bit earlier. I think it's going to get more and more competitive. You know, you've got online gaming. You've got sports betting that's spread all over the place. So you mentioned those things. You know, it's really about how. So Las Vegas in general, right? How do you get people to come there when they can go someplace that's a little bit closer to home? Now, I think from a Las Vegas perspective and even a Macau perspective, the advantage that they have is that they're clumped together. You know, you're visiting a group of casinos rather than an individual casino. So I think the challenges that you face from a citywide standpoint are different from what you would face if you were a standalone casino. But if I were, so I'm going to take it from a two-way approach. If I'm in the city in Las Vegas, it's how do you compete not only against those regional casinos but against each other? You know, how do you one-up the entertainers that are going to be right across the street, and how do you make sure that you are the first choice when they come to your property or when they come to your city? You know, so I think that's the challenge that they would face in Las Vegas. From a Macau perspective, I'll take it international. From a Macau perspective, how do you ensure that your business isn't volatile from the, you know, they're very vulnerable to changes in the Chinese government regulations, right? You see the stocks go up and go down when the Chinese government decides to put a little bit more scrutiny on money exchange, things like that. When you're a regional casino, I think you have a different challenge because now you've got so many here. There's almost 30 casinos here in Washington. How do you make sure that you are the one that stays top of mind? So I think, you know, the short answer to your question is, in the next 2 years, how do you make yourself stand out amidst all this competition and all these different changes that are happening in these different areas? From a use case perspective, let's talk about my casino, Snoqualmie Casino. So I'm about 3 months into my role here. And the first thing that I noticed about this property is just the physical plant. This is one of the most beautiful properties that I've been in, and I've been in a lot of properties across the world. But just the natural setting that surrounds us here, and we're only 20 minutes from the suburbs of Seattle. It takes me 19 minutes to get to work from here from Bellevue. But how do we rise above the competition? How do we stand out? And when I think about my own casino, it's really about, one, emphasizing its proximity to and the ease of getting here. It's really raising the profile of how people think about our casino. The one thing that we have that's an advantage is that, you know, our service levels. I mentioned earlier that, you know, even with all this advent of innovation, really it's about that frontline service. How do we make sure that we never lose sight of that? And then finally, how do you make sure that your casino is viewed as, you know, whatever your brand entails? For us, it's that we're the classiest in the area. So for me, my personal challenge is to how to depict that without saying it. One of my favorite sayings is, you know, Walter Payton. He said it on a Monday night football game, and he said, when you're good at something, you tell people about it, but when you're great at something, they'll say it for you. So really for us out here, it's about how do we build that brand? How do we build that experience to where we can overcome that additional competition, whether it be from new casinos opening, from regulations that might pop through, or just from the ease or access of regional gaming from a local level. So that is what I think our biggest challenge is in the next 2 years.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you so much. That was a really really thought out, well-rounded answer. I appreciate that.
Great. Thank you so much for calling. Thank you. All right, let's see. Some great questions tonight.
Fun.
Hello, this is Tino Magnetta. I have Stanford Lee. Do you have a question for him? Hello? There's nobody on that line. All right, we'll come back to that one. And then someone else here. Hello, this is Tino Magnetta. Do you have a question for Stanford Lee? Hello? Hello? Can you hear us? Let me try that again. One sec. Sometimes the technology can get a little funky.
Yeah, right?
Hello? Yeah, exactly. Hello, this is Tino Magnetta. I have Stanford Lee. Do you have a question for him? All right, well, let's go to the next one. See here. We'll come back to that one. Hello, this is Tino Magnetta. I have Stanford Lee. Do you have a question for him? Hello?
Hello, Stanford. Can you guys hear me okay?
Hello. Yeah. Hey, how are you?
Yes, right. We can.
Okay, hey. Just wanted to ask you, Stanford. It sounds great so far, man. You must have had an amazing time in Macau.
Yeah, I did.
You know, one of the questions is like, is there a project that you have in your current career, or your career that you're really proud of, or, you know, in your role that you're working with now that really stands out?
Yeah, well, you know, for me here in my current role, it's early days. So really it's about defining the vision and defining the brand that we're going to approach in the near future. So I'm really excited about that. Looking back into my past, had a lot of wonderful milestones in my career. I was part of the opening team for Wynn Palace in Macau. I also, when I was with Sands China, I was able to put together a lot of the opening staff who opened the Parisian out there, which was really cool. In Las Vegas, I was able to restart or reboot the Aliante out in North Las Vegas. I've had a pretty good wealth of opportunity to do, to basically recreate or start from scratch on a lot of different projects, and I'm very thankful for those opportunities. But you know, really, it's about what are you going to do next? You know, so when I think about my current property, it's what can I build here? How can I develop the team here, and really take what they've already done? I mean, they're a good team already, and how do we take it to the next level? So really that's what I'm most proud of, is the opportunities that I've been given and really stretching them. You know, building my team back in Macau, leaving a group of people back there that are going to be world beaters in their own rights. And I'd have to say, if there were anything that tied it all together, it was really about the people that I developed and the teams that I grew from scratch. And that goes across all the properties I've worked at.
Yeah, with all the managers that are now VPs now.
Yeah, you know, I'm really proud of the fact. You know, that's what I think I enjoy the most is really the paying it forward. And
yeah.
You know, just as I had good mentors, you know, how do you take what they gave you and take it to the next level? And you know, it's neat too because I keep in touch with a lot of people. I keep in touch with the bellman that I worked with at the Hard Rock a long time ago. And
cool.
You know,
wow.
Yeah, it's, you know, some of those guys are my best friends. So you never forget where you
Great.
Came from, and you take it and you pay it forward, you know. So I guess the short answer to your original question is, yeah, I'm my proudest accomplishment is the people that I've developed along the way.
No, it's great. Did you have another question?
Well, look, just really brief, Sanford, if you could just, you know, give us like a hint. How's your wife and the kids like the Northwest? Compared, you know,
oh,
they
love it here.
Apart.
Yeah, they love it here. You know, my wife, so I didn't give her enough airtime earlier, you know, because I talk about the kids a lot, but my wife is wonderful. She's my world. You know, it was funny. I actually had surgery earlier this year, and I came out of anesthesia, and the nurse brought her into the room, and you tell the truth when you're under anesthesia, so you gotta be careful coming out of it. And the first words out of my mouth were, "Wow, you know, hey, here's your wife. Oh, great, she's my world." So I'm glad I said that. But, you know, I think they love it out here. The schools here are top-notch. You know, I'm really proud of how my kids lean into being in new environments. I mean, I yanked them all over the world. We went from Las Vegas, my oldest especially, we went from Las Vegas to Ithaca, New York when I went to Cornell, back to Las Vegas to Atlantic City back to Las Vegas, and then Macau back to Las Vegas, and then up to Seattle. So, I mean, they're almost like they're military kids. And, you know, I appreciate that they've adapted everywhere that they've gone, to the point where actually my oldest is actually running for class president. She's new to the school. So, you know, wish her luck. But win or fail, win or lose, I mean, I'm very proud of her. And I think how are they doing? I think they're doing well. So thanks for asking.
Great. Great. Excellent.
That's
all right.
Great.
Good job, man.
Thank
right,
you.
Thanks,
thank
Take
you.
Care.
Thanks so much. Yeah. Okay. Hello, this is GT Radio. Do you have a question for Sanford?
Hi. Can you guys hear me okay?
Yes.
Oh,
sir.
Yeah. We hear you perfectly.
Hi, Sanford. My name is Brian. I wanted to give you a call and ask you a little bit about your experience. I heard kind of all of the places that you had worked before in your last answer, but I was particularly wondering what your thoughts were on the main differences between the challenges that you face at in a destination market versus what you face in more of a local market. Personally, I've been working for 8 years in Las Vegas at just a destination property, but I'm considering a switch over to the other side. And I was wondering, you know, what are the main points that marketers like yourself face when you're in a local property?
You know, that's a great question. So destination property, let's start with that. So when you're in Las Vegas, I mean, you're probably seeing your guests once every 13 months on average, right? And it's about a 2.2-day average stay, right? So really, it's about how do you drive that one trip? How do you stay top of mind and make sure that you are at the top of their decision set? And all of the things that you do are geared towards that singular focus, right? And then once they get here, you create that experience for them that is top-notch and gets them coming back next year, right? And if you're really good at what you do, maybe you get them to come twice in that 13 months, right? So that's the destination market. Now going to a regional market, talking about high frequency, you're talking about seeing somebody who you might see them 30 days in a row. And when you think about, and I'll get a little technical here, when you think about how we measure those guests, and we look at in a destination market, we'll look at their how much they spend in one trip or in one day. And that makes a lot of sense because, you know, you only see them one or two days out of the 365. Well, here in a regional casino, you need to make sure that you're recognizing those people who are spending every day with you. On a daily basis, they may not be spending as much, but, you know, when you think about a player who spends $1,000 with you in one day, versus someone who spends $100 with you in one day, that $100 player might be coming 30 days out of the month. So you really have to be careful on how you reward them and how you service them, right? I think one of the things that's a danger in a regional market is when you get a little too uncomfortable get a little too comfortable with the guest to where you really want to make sure that you're always giving them the right service, that no matter what, that you really are recognizing the value of that guest and always making sure you're maintaining that level of professionalism. You know, when you see the same customer day in and day out, I mean, you know, sometimes you develop almost too much comfort with them and you start saying the wrong things. So you always have to make sure that your professionalism is always super high and make sure that your team is always giving them that professional touch, because really you are their getaway even though they're there every day and you can't take that for granted. So I would say that's the biggest challenge is really making sure that you recognize the value of those guests who are coming more frequently, who might not be playing as much on a daily basis.
Interesting. Very good. Did you have another question?
Yeah, sure. Kind of a wild card question, if you don't mind. And maybe, Tino, you might even have some thoughts on this. But I was thinking about this when I was thinking about the casino that you come from, Stanford, and what the possible advertising methods are, and I thought of billboards, and I've always wondered, you know, how might someone measure the impact of a billboard to their marketing efforts? Are there ways that you can do an ROI on a billboard? I mean, do you use codes, or might you have any thoughts on that?
Well, codes are one way to do it, but I mean, you know, when you're doing a billboard, it's mainly about brand recognition and about exposure. It's really about triangulation. You know, you're looking at the number of impressions that you're getting from that billboard. But as far as narrowing down an exact ROI on a billboard, it's fairly difficult to do. The one thing about Seattle, there are no billboards out here.
okay, I didn't know that.
It's a lot of trees, so that is not a challenge that I'm facing at the moment. I mean, there's you know, when you get into Seattle proper, there's a couple of them, but you know, you're the one thing about Washington is that's really nice is they really value their environment and really value.
Mm-hmm.
The nature. I mean, in Las Vegas, you know, we have a lot of billboards. You know, it's really about how do you stand out amidst that forest of billboards. I think the worst thing that I've ever seen, I was in Hong Kong, and if you ever Google a picture of Mong Kok, and it'll shock you. There are 50 billboards in one picture. And it's just one street.
Wow.
And actually, I shouldn't say they're billboards, but it's just signs. How do you stand out in a forest of signs? And I think that relates back to your original question. You know, how do you make sure you're getting an ROI out of it? Very difficult to do. So you have to make sure that the billboards you're using or the medium that you're using, you have to have a manager expectations for that purpose.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, thank you. It was nice talking to you. Thank you for those answers.
Yeah, thanks for calling.
Thank you. Great questions.
Yep. All right, you're welcome. Thanks, Tino.
Yep. Stanford, great interview. This is really
Thank you. Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate all the calls.
Yeah. A lot of insights, and, you know, we'll have you back on. I really appreciate it. You have a good evening, and go 49ers.
Yeah, that's what I like to hear. Thanks, Tino.
Take care, buddy. We'll talk soon.
All right, we'll see you.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. All right, that was a great interview. Lots of insight. Stanford's great guy, and a lot of experience. Next week we have a special show. Dirk Whitebread, he's the GM of Meskwaki Bingo and Casino Resort. He has an incredible story. Lots of adversity, drug addiction, alcoholism. And how he basically turned his life around and now is an advocate of turning your life around. And he's become the GM of the casino. He runs marathons. I think he's run close to 50 of them. It's a truly incredible story. So I urge you to call in next week and listen. And remember, everybody's got a story to tell. You just have time to listen. Yeah, very, very good evening, and we'll talk soon. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.